The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, Miriam McGillicuddy, solicitor, is with us on the line for The Legal Lowdown. Miriam, good morning to you and thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, Jerry, and good morning, listeners, on this fine morning. Not raining, anyway.
No, we'll take that anyway. Yeah. Miriam, lots of queries and questions left over from last time, so we'll get straight into those. One listener asked the question, are children automatically entitled to inheritance?
Yes, but only in one situation where there's no will. So if there's no will and somebody dies leaving spouse or spouse children and no spouse, those children are automatically entitled to inherit. For example, if somebody dies maybe leaving a spouse and three children, the spouse is entitled to 2/3 and the children are entitled to 1/3 between them, and that's a legal right share. However, if somebody makes a will and maybe cuts out children completely out of the will, the children haven't an automatic legal right share, but they've a right to sue to the courts for a set share of the estate. The courts look at it as to whether they've been justly and properly provided for. It does involve a kind of a taking action in it. But if some child felt they'd been hard done by, they could bring that case to the courts. I suppose the most usual thing is that obviously parents provide for their children usually in a will, so that there would be no need for the case like that. But I suppose it depends on how people provide. They mightn't provide necessarily for children equally, and there is no absolute legal right share to get a set share from a parent in a will.
So those are the parameters that you're operating with. But you can take, if you feel you've not been dealt with fairly, you can take a challenge.
You can to court. And there's a lot of case law on it. They look at if the children have been properly provided for by the parents. They look at what gifts the child got during their lifetime, their present circumstances, the circumstances of the other siblings. And they look at it as if it was a just and prudent parent, is the way they look at it. So sometimes parents might cut out somebody where they have a drink or drugs problem, or maybe provide for them in a trust. And if the person objected to that, they could apply to court and say, I want my gift straight out. And I haven't got a drug problem, you know, if you know what I mean. So it's up to the court at the end of the day. And there's a lot of case law on it, and people get advice before they bring these actions. To be quite honest, Jerry, a lot of the time when people kind of kick up and say, I'm not happy with what I'm provided for and I should be provided with more, and threatening legal action, because the right is there, very often the family come to an arrangement between themselves to sort it out before the matter goes into court. Because if people take this type of action, very often the costs will be paid out of the estate, so it only diminishes the value of the estate down the line.
Yeah, it's self-defeating in some cases.
Exactly, yeah, that's right. And it mightn't be worth it in some cases, taking a case, but it's obviously people will get legal advice before they embark on that road. Often just sending a letter saying one is unhappy and threatening the legal action, as I say, can have effect. And then there's also a lot of succession mediators out there who can help sort matters out after the person dies if they feel they haven't been properly provided for.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's good to know in relation to that question. Another question here, Miriam. Could you ask Miriam to explain the difference between a power of attorney and enduring power of attorney, please?
Yeah, I suppose the power of attorney would be where you are compos mentis and you appoint somebody to manage your affairs. You're still around, but you might be in a different country and you want somebody maybe to sign a document in Ireland. You will appoint them, your attorney, to sign on your behalf or to operate on your behalf where you might be out of the jurisdiction or not available at a particular time. So they operate while you're still compos mentis and while you're alive. The enduring power of attorney operates, you appoint somebody to manage your affairs should you become non-compos mentis. What I mean by non-compos mentis is you're not of sound mind, you haven't got legal capacity. So if, for example, there's a risk you might develop Alzheimer's or dementia, you'd appoint people to manage your affairs who will only kick in when you develop that
enter
Alzheimer's.
That state of not being legally capable to manage your own affairs.
Yeah. So it's completely the enduring power of attorney is completely different to the straightforward power of attorney. It doesn't operate until you lose your legal capacity, and then the enduring power of attorney is registered. They're usually registered now, more usually with the Decision Support Service, and the attorneys then can operate to manage your affairs for your benefit. But you're no longer in the driving seat, as it were. You've given over power to these attorneys to manage your affairs. Obviously, they do an annual report, and they're monitored by the Decision Support Service.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what controls that from that point of view. Okay, that's the difference of the two. Miriam, another question in here, and a listener wants to get you to talk about the defamation of character within a neighbour community.
Yeah, I mean, defamation is covered by the Defamation Act 2009, and it's very, the definition is very simple. A defamation is any statement that would tend to injure a person's reputation in the eyes of reasonable members of the community. So there might arise situations where people feel they've been defamed, but taking action is quite expensive. And I suppose a remedy in this regard is quite difficult. I mean, one isn't going to spend thousands suing one's neighbour for defamation. And also, there's no legal aid available for it. So it makes it quite difficult for the normal person to defend their reputation in relation to other people in the community. They are considering updating the Defamation Act at the moment, but it would be handy if they had some simple, kind of almost small claims court where somebody has been defamed in their local community and they could go for a simple remedy for it. You know, have an almost anti-defamation, anti-social order, if you know what I mean.
One that doesn't end up in the High Court costing tens of thousands
and trying to
get some remedy at a more local level.
At a more local level. Now, one can report matters to the guards, and obviously if there's harassment or assaults or something of that nature, it might come within one of the...
It goes into the criminal side of things rather than civil.
Legislation, yeah. And there certainly, where it comes to criminal defamation, there have been cases in the past where there have been successful prosecutions. But as I say, within a neighbour community, it would be handy to have the equivalent of a small claims court or Judge Judy that we go to complain in relation to these, and it would be a cheap remedy, but we haven't got that, unfortunately, at the moment.
No. And speaking of that, Miriam, you mentioned the small claims court there. We've had people getting in touch with us, as they do from time to time, with different consumer complaints and issues that they're not happy with. And what's happened in the last number of years, particularly with inflation, is a lot of the damage from these has gone well beyond. Is it €2,000 the limit for the small claims?
That's right.
And is there an argument there that it needs to be increased in the light of inflation, that you should be able to bring something to small claims which is maybe €4,000, €5,000, €6,000 rather than just limiting it to?
That's right. And I've been following up on this, and apparently the courts are being looked at in relation to the limits for all the courts all up along the line. And as part of that, the Small Claims Court is being examined, and there is pressure on to put that limit up. So hopefully we'll see that in the not too distant future, because as you say, 2,000 is very small, you know, for the computer or the couch even.
Prices have gone well beyond that in most cases.
Well beyond that, yeah, in terms of consumer situation. So I would imagine we'll see an upping of the limits of all the courts in the not too distant future. They're looking at it as part of court organisation at the moment.
Yeah, okay, and that'll be one to keep an eye on. Okay, we've more queries. Yeah, we've more queries to get to. We'll get to those and more after we take these.
The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, we're talking with Miriam McGillicuddy for the Legal Lowdown. And Miriam, my question is about folio division and adverse possession. Says a listener, I heard Miriam say on your show that once there are time limits of 6 years in relation to splitting a folio, and if that 6 years has elapsed, that this could affect one's rights in relation to inheritance. What I want to know is whose rights?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question there. And I was just trying to make sense of it. I suppose in relation to adverse possession, first of all, somebody has to be in possession of land for 12 years before they gain adverse possession against the entitled owner. But I think what they're thinking of here is that when somebody dies and they've taken out the grant to the estate, maybe there's a will there and the executor or the administrators who are managing the estate, if there's no will, they have a year to try and sort things out. Then if a beneficiary doesn't get what they want under a will, they've 6 years to sue to get their fair share. And I'm just reading between the lines, and I think that's where this query is coming from. But effectively, if somebody is in occupation for, say one is entitled to land from one's parents or under a request in a will, and one doesn't take action on it, and somebody goes in on that land for 12 years, beyond the 12-year period, they have, strictly speaking, adverse possession, squatter's title, and one can't get them off. But I think what the person is thinking of here is maybe the property hasn't been signed into their name yet, and they've 6 years to sue to force the signing into their name. So that would be, I think, where the 6 year time limit comes from that they're talking about in relation to splitting a folio. And they're quite right, if 6 years have elapsed, could it affect one's rights in relation to inheritance? It affects it in that one might no longer have the ability to sue to get one's fair share put into one's name. So one might have to take action if there's a squatter in the property to force action to be taken. It should be done really before the 6 years elapse.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, another query, Miriam. A North Kerry listener says, my mother passed away 7 years ago, leaving me the farmhouse and my sister 30 acres of land bordering the farmhouse. I am the executrix and only now applying for probate, as my sibling went abroad and only just came back. Anyway, now that 7 years have passed, whose rights of inheritance are going to be affected, mine or my sister's? She could claim the farmhouse, or does the fact that the house isn't standing on the farmland but only bordering it help my situation? It stands on its own plot, and it's fenced off. In the will, it states that I get the farmhouse absolutely, whereas the balance of what's left in the property folio, i.e. the land, goes to the other side. Does the fact that she doesn't get it absolutely make a difference?
Yeah, the fact that they haven't taken out the grant probate yet isn't a big problem, and hopefully they'll get started on it now, take out the grant probate. And the will seems to be fairly clear, leaving farmhouse to one, land to the other. Then one takes out the grant probate and the executrix then signs over farmhouse to herself and the land to her sister. The fact that it didn't say it absolutely doesn't make a difference. We sometimes put in that word absolutely just to make absolutely sure, but it's not essential. You know, it's almost like a copper fasten in a situation, but it's not an essential word. Once somebody leaves something to somebody in a will, they don't have to say absolutely in it. So once they've left it, that's that. So it should be fairly straightforward. Takes out the grant to probate. Yeah. It might be a question of maybe clarifying boundaries. But there might be straightforward folios, like the house is on one folio with the map attached and the land is on another folio, and then it's very simple. But sometimes there might be disputes about how far a garden extends around a farmhouse, and then the parties agree between themselves with an engineer going out.
Legal advice is needed in relation to that.
Legal advice needed, yeah, exactly.
Okay, a question from a listener. If a pedestrian is knocked down by an e-scooter whilst on the footpath, who pays for medical expenses?
This is a difficult... The person is quite right to raise this. I mean, if an e-scooter is on the footpath, presumably it's in breach of the road traffic regulations if it's flying along on an electrically motorized vehicle on a footpath. but they might not have insurance. No, strictly speaking, the person who runs into the other person is liable for their damages and their medical expenses. But if the person has no money and has no assets, it may be difficult for them to recoup from that particular person. If the council, again, I suppose it raises a query, if the council are allowing e-scooters on footpaths, does the person have a case against the authorities? But it would be one that they would need to seek legal advice on, definitely. And it just highlights the whole issue around e-scooters, that they haven't necessarily got insurance.
Yeah, certainly not. They're relatively a new addition to our streetscapes. Dog barking constantly, Miriam. Can anything legally be done about it? I'd imagine you can get onto the council. You're entitled to a right to enjoy your property in peace and quiet, isn't that right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, obviously one would approach the person themselves and maybe see what the problem is, and see if it can be abated on the ground just by talking. And yeah, then that's the first protocol. Second protocol would be the dog warden, who often would go out and talk to the person and see if it can be sorted. Next would be the council, as you say, and see if they would take action against the person. But one can take a private nuisance case in relation to dog barking, and these are very effective in relation to forcing the person to get the dogs to stop, or else they'll be put down. There's that remedy available to the court.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, a question here, Miriam. My father died in 2008 and everything was left to my mother. He had a small insurance policy of about €5,000 at the time. My mother died almost 8 years ago. We went through probate and what money she had left went to my sister. This was around €3,500. Just recently, the same insurance company have come back to say they found another policy in my father's name. It will be about the same amount, a figure of €5,000, and will go to my sister again. The amount will not have gone through probate, and so as the executor, I'm not sure what to do. Have you any advice?
Yeah, when one is an executor, one makes a kind of a return on a person's estate, both the father's and the mother's. And those returns are done to revenue, and then they go through the probate office. But if you discover another asset in an estate, you can do a simple amendment to the form to reflect the new amount. And that might need to be reflected here in both dad's form and mom's form. And then once one has done that, one can then proceed to distribute in the normal way. So just to maybe go back to this, if there was a solicitor dealing with this date, to have a chat with them about it, and they can sort out what needs to be done.
Good idea for everybody. If you have an insurance premium, tell your family about it, they don't get surprised.
That's
down the line.
Right. And Gerry, we find as well, in a lot of situations, people might have bank accounts that remain undiscovered, and obviously that's where the dormant accounts
ends up going to the state.
Funds, yeah, that's right. It's because I suppose normally now when people pass away, one would send a letter to all the banking institutions in the area just to double check if they have any accounts, to make sure it all comes back into the estate.
Okay, a listener says, hi Gerry, can I ask Miriam, I'm separated 4 years, not legally, so it's not a legal separation. I want to sell a property solely in my name, but my ex won't sign the spouse form. Is there anything I can do to get the sale over the line without his signature? It would take too long to get separation done at the moment, as we have a family home to sort out.
Yeah, that's a difficult one, all right. I suppose there is a situation whereby, first of all, if the spouse lived in the family home with them, then it would have been a family home in the past.
Yeah, but I think this is a separate property to have solely in their own name.
Yeah,
as opposed to the family home.
Now, strictly speaking, one could sign a family law declaration that it's never been a family home, and that the parties aren't separated, that there's no litigation pending or anything like that. That's one of the forms that one can sign. I'm presuming, though, since they're demanding the signature of the ex-spouse, that it was a family home at one period during
maybe
his lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why the form is needed. But there is an application one can make to court, but again, expensive, where one applies to court to dispense with the consent of the other spouse in relation to sale of the property. So it is it's a simple one-issue application, just seeking the court to give an order to dispense with that spouse's consent. So it is possible to do that. But obviously, is expensive, and if there are other ways around it, I'd be looking at all other ways before going down
to try and going to that road, because it's an expensive one, as you said. Okay, Miriam, I recently made a will with a certain solicitor and they did it free of charge. Can I change solicitor again, as I'm not totally happy with their service? Also, can I ask, as I have a large inheritance to distribute, what percentage does the solicitor charge on the benefit of who receives my inheritance? Should I negotiate with them on this matter, or do they all charge the same?
Yeah, I mean, the solicitors would all charge, I suppose, in or around, certain figures commensurate with what other solicitors would be charging in an area. But I just take the question in two points. Number one, she said she'd recently made a will but wasn't happy with it. Can she change? She can certainly change. She could ask the new solicitor to send an authority to the old solicitor to get the old will. But I mean, with wills, one can update them all the time. So she could go into her new solicitor, do up a new will, and that would effectively revoke the previous will anyway. So that's on the first point there. Then the second point in relation to distribution to beneficiaries, I've never had a situation where somebody would negotiate the solicitor's fee for the beneficiaries in advance of their demise. So she's really thinking ahead there. But I suppose it will be well down the line, and prices might be different then. So it's really up to her beneficiaries to negotiate with the solicitor at the time as to the best price they can get in relation to extracting the grant probate and distributing the estate. Sure. Because it could be 20 or 30 years down the line, and then, hopefully a long time down the line, and prices could be totally different then.
They could be, yeah. Miriam, the other query got back, it was never a family home.
Never
so
a family home.
So it's a sole name home.
Yeah, there may be scope, as I say, go back to your solicitor and have chatted over, because there are a number of options there. That hopefully she'd be able to exercise without going to court.
Brilliant. Miriam, listen, thanks a million for all of that. Lots of queries answered today. You'll be back with us again next month, and thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Gerry, and thank you, listeners. Have a lovely day.